It's time for another special edition of College Crosscast as we get you all set for the women's Final Four and take a look back at a wild quarterfinal weekend. I'm Ryan McDonald.
I'm Jake Nazar.
I'm Skylar Gilbert.
I'm Harry Holtzclaw.
I'm Laura Barastucky.
And we've got a full house on this edition as we get you all set for the road to Stony Brook on this edition of College Crosscast. And thanks for joining us. Happy to have Laura and Harry on board to help us out on this one. So we got some BC and James Madison bias on the show to go along with Jake's Marylandness and Skylar. Well, Skylar with Stony Brook.
Well, I'm usually Stony Brook, but today I'll be on behalf of North Carolina.
And I'll be
I actually think is going to win the title, but we'll get to that later.
And I'll be the neutral observer. By the way, the road to Stony Brook involves having to take the LIE, and this time of day, good luck with that, going eastbound on the LIE. So it goes.
Oh, a double R is better.
Yeah. But first off, thank you, Laura and Harry, so much for joining us. Glad to have some special guests to help us out.
No problem. Happy to be on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
All right, so at the risk of the last time we talked about Jake and Skylar's other favorite sports thing of the year, that kind of fell the team involved into a little bit of a downswing. So we're not going to say anything because there's an important thing after we record this, so we're not even going to mention that. Let's dive right into the lacrosse.
You see, the Maryland lacrosse team was they were wearing their jerseys yesterday at practice. The women's team.
Yeah, I did see that.
I think it was like Carolyn Steele and Megan Taylor, and like a couple of the star, like they gave interviews wearing Caps jerseys. It was pretty cool. Anyway.
Yeah, that's all we're saying about that.
The 1 point to my heart. All we're saying.
So we had a very interesting quarterfinal Saturday in the women's tournament last week. All close games for the most part. We had a thriller in the game that we thought was going to be the thriller. And we had some surprising thrillers, including number one, Maryland was in a very good ball game with Maryland foe Navy in a little bit of a rivalry game. And the Terps on a national television audience on BTN, because BTN knows what they're doing, unlike the rest of the NCAA. Maryland 17, Navy 15. The Terps returned to the Final Four. In that game, Terps were led by Jen Giles with 7 points, 4 goals, 3 assists, as they hold off a Navy onslaught on offense. Very high scoring and a very fun game to watch between the two of them. But in the end, it's the Terps getting back to Memorial Day weekend and earning themselves a trip up to Stony Brook.
Yeah, this was a really good game. Maryland had the lead early, I believe 9-5. Navy reeled off, I believe, like 5 in a row to end the half, and then a couple more to start the second half and really controlling the game. Julia Collins was the big story. She had 8 goals on the day. She was pretty much completely dominant until Maryland began to shut her off late in the game after they got the lead to try and slow the game down a bit. But yeah, Navy was able to get the offense going through her, and then really dictate pace quite a bit, which is normally Maryland's strength. But Navy kind of really took it to them in that regard and dictated the pace, had more possessions while they were making their run. They'd shut down Megan Whittle for the majority of the game. Eventually, Maryland just kind of started getting things going a bit late in the second half. Navy started to make some mistakes, and Maryland's always so good at capitalizing on that. Megan Taylor made some saves, and they just kind of pieced it back together a bit through the second half. They went on a 4-goal run. Eventually, once the train started going downhill, it was all in from there. But yeah, this was much like the game last year for Maryland, the quarterfinals against Stony Brook. This was in doubt for a large portion of the game.
Any other thoughts from the rest of you?
I mean, Navy is... They're always built for May. I mean, last year they went to the Final Four. They played BC in the Final Four last year. They're a dominant team, especially when the Collins sisters are playing strong. And I think you saw 8 goals from Julia Collins, and it challenged Maryland. But again, it was the same thing we saw from Stony Brook last year, and the same thing Stony Brook did against BC this weekend, where the 3-goal lead in the second half, Maryland just being the more experienced team was. Or more experienced program, I should say, because the individuals aren't really, was able to pull it out and get back to the Final Four.
We'll move on to another team that has dominated the sport, and that would be UNC against another team that's been a dominant program, Northwestern. So a battle of two Titans in that quarterfinal, but number 2 seeded UNC hold serve and win that one 19-14. So the Tar Heels going to their 10th Memorial Day weekend with that victory over the Wildcats.
Yeah, I mean, this was a game. It was back and forth for most of the first half. I think it was 6-6 at one point, and then UNC had a 9-8 lead, but from there, the Tar Heels really pulled away and ended up winning it 19-4. The two players for North Carolina that I look to are both freshmen and both actually Long Island natives, where Jamie Ortega, a freshman, had 5 goals. She's the all-time leading high school scoring leader in New York State and obviously Long Island history. And she's had a phenomenal freshman year for the Tar Heels. And also the player in goal for them, Taylor Moreno. I'll definitely get more to her when I speak on North Carolina's behalf in my title pitch a little bit later. But Taylor Moreno in this game against Northwestern had 17 saves. She's just been spectacular since taking over for Elise Hennessy halfway through the season for UNC.
Yeah, it's definitely pretty remarkable what Moreno's done. I saw it when they played James Madison the first game of the year. She didn't start that game. She came in late and ended up looking really, really good. Kept him in the game with she had more saves and less minutes than the starting keeper. I'm not sure. I don't know. Depends when she came in. But she played really well, and I was really impressed. And it's kind of cool to see her take over the starting role and really I think she was ACC Defensive Player of the Year. So she's played really well. Then obviously with Marie McCool, she's, you know, one of the best players in lacrosse. She's so fun to watch. She's so fast. So they're a daunting team.
Say definitely from a BC perspective and seeing Murano in the ACC championship game, she definitely terrifies us a little bit going into this. She made some really stellar saves against a very good BC team. So definitely someone to keep an eye on.
Yeah, I mean, this game was 11-8 at halftime, and UNC had 8 more saves. Like Northwestern had outshot them.
It really is. 22-20. It's just a page right now. UNC has the hot goalie, and like you look to hockey and you see Vegas going to the finals because Marc-Andre Fleury has like a 947 save percent. It's kind of like that with UNC right now, where they have the best goalie in the country right now. And she's only a freshman.
UNC had more draw controls, but they kind of threw that out the window by blowing 3 clears. This was in the first half. In the second half, they kind of pieced things together and maintained the lead. But in that first half, they were not really outplaying Northwestern. They had 5 more turnovers. They were very sloppy, but they came away with a 3-goal lead, mostly through the fact that good finishing themselves. You know, Northwestern only had 2 saves, but just great goaltending that, you know, really, I mean, great goaltending bails you out. You know, pretty much, you know, if you make mistakes and you know, give the other team chances, but you have a goalie to, you know, make the saves and you can finish them on the other end, those things kind of go away.
And also with Marino, you know, riding the hot hand, she's been pretty much on fire since the ACC tournament, too. So UNC's, you know, really riding her hand all the way to championship weekend. And, you know, goaltending can steal you a championship. And they're at this point now that, you know, if she stays hot this weekend in Stony Brook, the Tar Heels could be walking away with another national title.
Yeah, for sure.
Down in Virginia, number 3 seeded James Madison takes care of their business against Florida in a 11-8 victory. So the Dukes heading to the national championship weekend for the first time since 2000. 9 saves out of Molly Doherty might offsets Haley Hicklin's 12 saves for the Gators and puts the 20-1 James Madison Dukes into the championship weekend. Harry is our JMU guy for this podcast, so your observations on this game will start with you as you cover the game.
Well, I thought it was a bit of an unorthodox first half. It was very, very low scoring. I think it was 5-4 one way. Which was a lot different from JMU, who usually scores 16, 17 goals a game, and has proved that they can score the best. So it was interesting to see that. Now JMU ended up turning it up a notch in the second half. I think they ripped off 7 straight goals in the second half, and they tend to do that. A trend that I've noticed with JMU that I noticed again is they love to build up leads, especially early in the second half, and they seem to let off the gas pedal. And I don't mean to be cliche. But, you know, against North Carolina, they were up 2 or 3 in the final couple of minutes. And North Carolina ended up coming back, tying the game, winning multiple draw controls in a row. This happened severely when they played Penn State. They were up 12-5 against Penn State. Seemed over. It was about 10 minutes left in the game. And they slowly came back. And it ended up being they also did this Townsend ended up pushing them into overtime, and it was this horrible blown lead where they couldn't get draw controls. So I didn't like seeing that late in the game when Florida really, really started to score over and over, won the draw control category by 5 or 6 pretty handily. And if it weren't for some sloppy turnovers in the midfield, it could have been a different game. So I didn't love seeing that. But overall, I thought they looked good. I thought Dougherty played really, really well in goal, and she's played really well, I thought, ever since she won the starting job earlier in the year from Ellie Harmeyer, and yeah, solid performance. I was happy. Florida was definitely, you know, I look at the landscape of women's lacrosse, those big 5 teams, and then a little bit of a drop-off, but I think there's another drop-off after Florida. I think Florida's kind of in their own tier 2 with those 5 teams in tier 1 and then kind of the rest of the field in tier 3. So it was definitely a really, really good win. I'm sure it helped that they were playing at home. I'm happy they were, and yeah, it was a great win.
Right, and then the game of the weekend that we hyped up, that lived up to the hype. Sad news for Skylar, very happy news for Laura. So brace yourselves for this one. Number 4 BC and number 5 Stony Brook. Argue they should have been higher seeds, and they brought it in Chestnut Hill, actually, Newton. Fields in Newton, even though it's in Chestnut Hill, but another than it's Boston, but I digress. BC 12, Stony Brook 11 in overtime, ending Stony Brook's magical run, but continuing BC's. And Dempsey Arsenal with the game winner in overtime to give BC the win. A game that you didn't want to see either team lose, but someone had to, and the Eagles are the team that's heading to Stony Brook, while Stony Brook will not be able to have that magical home field weekend. But for a game that, you know, the two teams that have kind of defined the season, they brought their A games and gave us a classic quarterfinal.
Oh, I mean, I guess I can start. From a Stony Brook perspective, it's it's a heartbreaking end to a record-breaking season. The Seawolves had been the only undefeated team all through the regular season and conference playoffs. But for Stonebridge, you just can't lose the draw 20-6 and expect to beat a team like Boston College, and that's what it comes down to. For BC, Sam Apuso and Dempsey Arsenal, the kind of the tandem of those two in the draw circle were just so dominant all through this game. And the Seawolves were just unable to get enough possessions. A 20-6 advantage in draw controls. You know, within the base offense and within the base defense, I think Stony Brook actually outplayed Boston College in both those areas. But when you're giving up 14 possessions to a top five team in the country, you're not going to win. And that's basically that. For Stony Brook, it was an outstanding effort by Allie Kennedy, a sophomore. She doesn't have the status that Kylie O'Miller or Courtney Murphy have, but she actually had 5 goals in this game because they were really face guarding and doing a good job of it against Kylie O'Miller and Courtney Murphy the whole game. The third attacker on Stony Brook, Taryn O'Miller, actually missed the game because she tore her ACL in the second round game against Penn. So playing a little bit shorthanded and having a terrible day on the draw was not a winning recipe for Stony Brook, and all credit to BC because they came back in the second half and made plays when they needed to. It was a nice pass from Sam Apuso to Dempsey Arsenal for the winner, and now BC is on to the Final Four.
This was a pretty classic game for BC from what we've seen this season, where they might jump out to a little bit of an early lead and then they slow down a little bit in the first half, only to have to mount a comeback in the second half, which they have done successfully for all but one game so far this year. But yeah, it's definitely dominating on the draw control, particularly with Apuso. It's been huge in all the wins, but was a particularly huge bonus against Stony Brook, and really where BC, I think, won the game.
Draw controls, but also Stony Brook blew 4 clears as well.
Down the stretch, yeah.
Mostly in the third first half, because the second half was when the possession battle really got to just be really exaggerated. You know, but yeah, it was, I mean, I think, yeah, like Scott said, in the base offense and defense, you know, I think Stony Brook's defense played a really, really good game. But it just felt like the lack of possessions just kind of wore on them. That, you know, like even when they got on offense in play as the game kind of moved on, they just weren't in any sort of flow. And so, you know, BC face guarding O'Miller and Murphy definitely played a part in that. Because, you know, as we've seen in all college across this year, that's, you know, a big thing. But it was just, it felt like whenever they got the ball, it was like the start of the game, where you have to work your way into a flow on offense. And it was like every time they touched the ball in the second half and as the game went on, it was like they were in that mode because they were playing just so much without the ball. And so it was like, even when they, because I mean, they were making some big stops late in the game, you know, to try to, because they got the lead late in the first half, and they led by 3 at one point. But it was just the possessions, and so even if they got a stop or they got a, you know, a big save, they won the goaltending battle for the most part. They really couldn't capitalize on it, and then if, you know, once it got back to the draw circle, BC would win, go back down on offense, and BC handled it well. You know, it's, possessions aren't everything, you know, in the sport. You can very easily not take advantage of possessions, and even when Stony Brook was playing really good defense, BC was still able to, you know, just keep plugging away at it and eventually get their goals, you know, got the Tess Chandler tied up with 3:39 left. And so, I mean, yeah, you know, it's, you never want to say that everything comes down to possessions, because it doesn't. But, I mean, it was really exaggerated in this game how much defending Stony Brook had to do and how much offense BC had.
Yeah, one part of this game that I'll point to was with 5 minutes left, 5:24 to be exact, and Stony Brook already had a one-goal lead. They had a man-up chance right there, and Stony Brook got the ball in the offensive zone. They called timeout, and they drew up a play for the man-up, and then immediately out of the timeout, Kylie O'Miller actually turned the ball over on the man-up chance. Stony Brook could have made it a two-goal lead, and with the turnover, BC at the other end tied the game. So that was really when I felt like Stony Brook was going to choke this lead. I hate to use that word because I know how much they want, but as a Capitals fan, I'm pretty acclimated with choking, and it was another choke job for Stony Brook, unfortunately. I didn't realize, I knew how good Apuza was. I didn't realize how good Demp Arsenal is in all three zones.
Sam gets all of the kind of credit which she deserves, but there's a lot of players, Dempsey first and foremost, but Elizabeth Miller, Kayleen Hart, that I think kind of sneak up on teams because they're so focused on stopping Sam.
It's interesting. In the post game, Joe Spolino, the Stony Brook head coach, actually said that most of their defensive game plan was based around Kayleen Hart. She's been on fire. She was the guy that Spolino thought they really had to slow down. And to their credit, they kind of did. I mean, other than it. No, Hart had 4 goals. Apuza only had 1.
Yeah.
And so they slowed down Apuza. But that offense is so deep and they have so many weapons. And I know they have Hart and Chandler graduating, but then you have Kent, a bunch of really good freshmen coming next year, too.
Yep.
So this is a program that's going to stay elite for a while.
So before we get into the make the case for each team fun segment we're going to have with the Final Four, a little post-mortem on the teams. You know, Northwestern and Florida are in power conferences, kind of have it perpetually, you know, top 10 teams or so. Northwestern making a little bit of a comeback this year. But the interesting case is going to be Navy and Stony Brook. You know, Navy last year made the Final Four, so they're kind of into that tier. And we discussed in the last episode, too, with Stony Brook. Yeah, you're losing Al Miller and you're losing Murphy, but you're also now at the point where you can reload a bit if you're Joe Spolina and the Seawolves. So where do we see everyone, you know, treating this offseason and where things go from here? I think, you know, Stony Brook might be the biggest interesting case because of losing two elite players that they are, but at the same token, now they're in that position where they can reload where they weren't in that prior to having Ole Miller and Murphy.
Yeah, I mean, when you're losing the all-time leader in points and the all-time leader in goals in NCAA history, you're losing basically your whole offense. So for Stony Brook, it is going to be completely retooling. They've had a lot of players kind of in the system that are ready for their chance. So it's not like, you know, they're losing 70% of their offense and they're not going to be scoring 8-9 goals next year. They're still going to be an elite team. But it's just going to be a question of which players step up. Who's going to be the Connor Fields that steps up when Lyle Thompson graduates? That's one example I think of. And the obvious answer is Taryn Ole Miller, because, I mean, she's been playing in her sister's footsteps for her whole entire life, and she's shown that she can be a major playmaker. Big question there, obviously, is she tore her ACL. So I hope she has a successful recovery, and then she'll be the focal point of that offense next year. Allie Kennedy had 5 goals against BC. She'll be a pivotal role in the midfield for Stony Brook. But then you know, you start to question where that offense is coming from. You see, Shabon Rafferty is a freshman that Joe Spolina really likes. So is Reyna Sabella. There's other pieces, but they're not players that you'll have heard of before. One constant with Stony Brook is going to be that defense. They've been a top five rated defense in the NCAA for the last 6 years. And that'll stay the same next year. But the question for Stony Brook next year is certainly going to be an offense. And then circle, to be frank, because that's an area where it's their Achilles heel every single time they go into the playoffs.
I'm looking at Navy. They lose the Collins sisters, which are obviously, you know, big blows, especially because they were just such great goal scorers. But after they said of their top nine scorers, they returned seven. Kelly Larkin was, you know, their number one point producer, even with being relatively quiet against Maryland. Then Andy O'Sullivan's back, Meg O'Donnell's back, Kayla Harris, Molly Sullivan. You go down the lineup there. Seven of the top nine goal scorers they have all return. They do lose their goalie in Good Boyum. And there are some other players throughout the lineup, some key pieces they have to replace. But for the most part, they return, you know, the core of this team, which won 18 games this year. And also was also mostly the core of the team that made the Final Four last year. So maybe losing to Collins will be, you know, a slight hit and something you have to, you know, work through when you have two players who are such a focal point of your offense. But for the most part, they look like a team that will be back around this position next year.
The bigger issue with Navy is that Loyola is losing almost nobody. And in the Patriot League, you know, it's between those two teams, Navy and Loyola. So that'll be a bigger issue for Navy next year. But and then briefly looking at Florida and who was the other one? Oh, Northwestern. Florida is a young team. They're losing the older Pareka sister. And it's been a program that, you know, Florida is going to be there in the top five or in the top eight just about every year. I'm not sure if they'll be national title contenders really next year, but yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if Florida's the top eight seed again in 2018. As for Northwestern, I think Selena Lasota is on my Tewaratin shortlist for 2019 already. She was just on absolute fire for Northwestern this year. She'll be returning next year for her redshirt senior year. Attacker out of British Columbia. She's a star. And I know Apuso is probably going to be the favorite for the Tewaratin next year, but Selena Lasota will be right there with her.
And they play so many people. Like, they have like 12 players who had double-digit points. And most teams, you know, are concentrated among like six or seven. So they play so many players. So even if they lose like three of their top four scores. They lose their top three scores after Lasota. I mean, when you play so many people and you have such depth throughout your lineup, and they have a lot of freshmen too.
Maryland look like effect. Have so much depth that it's not going to matter. There's people you've never heard of now that are going to be stars next year.
Yeah, I mean, they had, you know, freshmen who put up, you know, double-digit points and some sophomores who put up some big numbers. So, yeah, I mean, all four teams who lost look like they're in. I don't see anyone who's, you know, wow, you know, like this could get bad quickly kind of. Yeah. I mean, Stony Brook's a missed opportunity for Stony Brook. We talked about the same deal.
You're never going to have Kylie O'Miller again.
Nope.
And exactly to not do it with her is kind of a heartbreak, but
it's a missed opportunity. But like, there's no, none of these teams are losing like graduating like whole teams or anything like that. You know, they all look like probably tournament teams next year or around that.
All right, so after the quarterfinals, that sets up the Final Fours. all kind of chalky too. All top four seeds advance, as we said last night, first time since 2002 that both the men's and women's tournaments have the top four seeds in the Final Four, but that means we're going to be in for a very high-quality Final Four in Stony Brook this Friday and Sunday. Friday will be James Madison, UNC at 5, and Boston College of Maryland at 7:30. So we're going to have some fun with our Final Four preview. Everyone's going to be making their case for their team, because Harry covers JMU and Laura covers BC. Jake, as we all know, is a very big Maryland fan, and Skylar is our women's lacrosse expert that's going to pretend to be a UNC fan. So we'll start off with James Madison in North Carolina, and we'll start off with covering James Madison's chances. And Harry, it's your turn to make the case for the Dukes as a national title contender.
Well, we all know it's tough to beat a team twice, but this is the team that can do it. They've been talking about this. I wrote the season preview for them, and in the season preview, every girl I talked to, you know, our sights are set on this Final Four and this national championship, and I haven't heard that from them before. And what helps them? What helps JMU so much? They play seven seniors. They start six, play seven, and those seven are probably seven of the best eight players on the team. Although they haven't been in a Final Four, they've played a lot of games. They won a game in the tournament last year against, I think, Louisville. So they've played a lot of games. I don't think they're going to be intimidated by the stage. I do think it will be interesting with the two different goalies now starting, with Molly starting for JMU and Taylor starting for UNC. I think the offense is going to be a little bit too much for UNC. UNC's got the great offense. We know this is going to be a great game. I think that's a given. I think that's a given about both games, although Maryland does have a tendency to beat. I think this game definitely has thriller written all over it. I'm not sure overtime again. I think we'll see low scoring again in the first half, just like against Florida, something in the 6-7 range, one or two goals. And then I think JMU will rip off one of their signature runs early in the second half, just like they've done all year. 6 or 7 straight goals, really take it to them. They ended the UNC game really strong last time. Gave up a goal or two, but played really good defense when it came down to it. Went into double overtime, and UNC won the draw in both of those overtime periods, and got shots off in both of those overtime periods. I believe at least one or two shots on goal. So I think a little momentum carries, and this JMU team has a lot of confidence on their shoulders. They're a fun bunch, and I think they definitely have what it takes to take down UNC for the second time this season.
And, of course, their opponent will be UNC, a team that's not at all a stranger to Memorial Day weekend. So, Skylar, how do you think the Tar Heels will fare in your neck of the woods of Stony Brook this weekend?
I think it's the end of the road for James Madison on Friday night. And sorry to say that, Harry, but I think this North Carolina team is, I think they're just too deep, and I think they have the right right player playing in net now. I'll start on offense. Katie Hogue, a sophomore, has been phenomenal this year. She's their primary feeder. She has 48 assists. 87 points, leads all scores on North Carolina. But that offense is four deep. It's Hogue, Ortega, Hazard, and McCool. They're the only team in the country to have four scorers of at least 75 points. And when you have that, you can't face guard anybody, because it's just another person that's beating you. It's Marie McCool coming out from the midfield. It's Ella Hazard, who is, you know, a Towson candidate last year, and her numbers are down this year, but she still has that senior presence. It's Jamie Ortega, the ACC Rookie of the Year. It's all these players at UNC that, you know, it's just that depth on offense. The area of concern for me for the Tar Heels is in their defense. Not the goalkeeping per se, but the actual defense. They do give up a lot of shots. You saw that against Northwestern. They gave up a lot of shot attempts. You saw that in the two games against BC. You even saw that against Maryland, a game they won, and against JMU in the season opener. This team surrenders a lot of shots, but on the plus side for the Tar Heels, they have Taylor Moreno back there, and she has been a star. She has a 5.55 save percentage, which for women's lacrosse in particular, where, you know, shots are usually from, like, right in front of the goalie, 5.55 is fantastic. I don't know if she's qualified to lead the country, but if she did, she would be one of the nation's leaders. And this is against big-time opponents that she's come up with huge games against. I mean, against Northwestern, she saved 17. Against Virginia Tech, she saved 17 out of 25. Against BC, she saved 50%. And then had a game against Virginia where she saved 17 out of 26. She just has these big-time save numbers every time UNC needs a big win. And I think she'll come through again this weekend. I think Taylor Moreno is going to stand on her head against that really talented JMU offense with Godian and with Romesburg. And I think UNC makes it back to the championship game.
And if I may add one thing, I do think she definitely is the X factor. She's played great, but it also is interesting with UNC with a couple slip ups this year with the three losses. One of those coming against Florida, and I'm not one to use the transition property. I didn't bring that up, but it was interesting to see that game. They really got dominated in both halves of that game. They lost the first half by 4 goals. I think they lost the second half by 4 goals. Really dominant on both halves, and Moreno played the entire second half, gave up 9 goals. Now she seems to be a little bit of a different keeper now. Now she's kind of got her feet a little bit wet, but that's a little interesting. Seeing that, I believe they won the draws that game.
Game was interesting. I actually know about that game, but I didn't see it when it happened. I remember seeing the score, and I was like, really, Florida beat UNC by 7? It didn't click in my head. But, yeah, I mean, that was a slip-up, but, I just think it's a different team playing now. The way they beat BC in the ACC championship, they're really on a roll right now, this Tar Heels team. And Jenny Levy has that championship pedigree. 2 years ago they won the title. Last year they got upset early, but she's coached championship teams before.
Absolutely.
And in the nightcap, we got a rematch of last year's national championship game, and it should be another good one as well, as Boston College and Maryland face off once more. And Laura, this is BC's second Final Four as a program and second in a row. And they've come back even stronger than ever. So how do you think the Eagles will fare this weekend and as they try to go for their first national title?
I mean, I definitely think that this is going to be a very good game. I think because BC is new to the Final Four, some people have been discounting them a little bit more than they should. Because if you look at this team, they are pretty balanced overall. They have a very balanced attack. So you hear about Sam Apuzzo, Dempsey Arsenal, Kaylin Hart, but you're also getting goals from any number of other players, from Kara Erbank, the Schur sisters, even Elizabeth Miller, who's kind of the key on defense, has picked up a few goals later in the season. So you have that really balanced offense, but then just a really underrated ride, making it difficult for the teams to other teams to transition. And like I said, with Elizabeth Miller, really solid defense. Really great coaching with Coach Walker, and then with Kayla Treanor being added to the staff with that goal with Arsenal at the end of the Stony Brook game. You could see that they were adjusting their strategies in game, in real time, switching it up and making it work. I think it's going to kind of come down to, is Lauren Daly having a good day in goal or not? That's been the weakness. She has some really phenomenal moments, but she's definitely not the best goaltender in the Final Four right now. But I think also another thing to just kind of keep in mind with BC is people talk about Sam Apuzzo scoring all those goals, but even if the other team manages to shut her down like Stony Brook did, she has 31 caused turnovers this season. She's won 145 draw controls. So even if you shut our top player down on offense, she's really going to strongly contribute in other areas of the game. But yeah, I think this team just has a lot of fight. They've come back from down in the second half a lot of times, and they're definitely this. They see this as redemption. They want to win the match that they couldn't win last year.
And that leaves us with the one seed and defending national champion Maryland Terrapins, as the Terps once again are in a Final Four, and that gives us our resident Maryland homer, Jake Nazar, to make his case for the Terps getting the title back.
I mean, what can you really say about Maryland that hasn't been said a million times before? You know, they're super deep on offense. They go, you know, eight players, really. They make big, eight players score 20 goals or more. Eight players with, you know, 20 or more points. They spread the ball around. They have the experienced goalie in Megan Taylor, who always has come up with big saves at key times. I think they have probably the advantage in net over Boston College. They're not going to get dominated at, you know, the draw controls the way Stony Brook did. I think, you know, obviously Apuzzo's going to be really tough to go up against, and they did have some trouble at times against Navy, but they definitely can go deep on draw controls as well and use and throw different players at Apuzzo, whether it be Hartshorn or Colson. It depends on how they go there. They're a complete team. Obviously, BC is as well, so, you know, this is a really, really close matchup, but Maryland has, they've got a good mix, I think, of experienced players and also, you know, young players that bring a different edge to this team. I think they're finding, you know, just the right mix as far as, you know, chemistry goes, and I think Maryland always finds a way to sort of impose their will and impose, you know, the way they like to play on the game, and I think that's what they do really against anyone, you know, no matter who the competition is. And BC's probably, you know, the best team they've played all year. They did lose to UNC as well, so, you know, those teams are probably neck-and-neck. But I don't know, I just think this team, they know how to get it done. They have the right pieces in place. They have the experience. If they need to shut off Apuzzo, they did it against Julia Collins of Navy. And so they have, you know, they know they have the game plans in place to do that. And, you know, they have the defenders who can, you know, match up against some of other BC's, you know, top threats as well. So, yeah, I mean, this will be a great game. These two teams just, I mean, you really look at it in all the categories, they're really close. Draw controls are really close. Scoring, defense, offense, you know, they're really neck and neck. They've both given up to 203 goals per 203 goals a season. They've BC scored 347, Maryland scored 343. You know, I mean, they're just really close game. I think Maryland will get a few more saves from Megan Taylor. I think their defense will be able to contain, Apuzzo the way Stony Brook did, and I think Maryland's offense will, you know, find the right the goals through their depth of scoring and, you know, the way they have contributed throughout the lineup. And if they get to the championship game, they've been there plenty of times before. They know how to get done there, and yeah.
All righty. So once again, 5 o'clock.
What do you think?
Yep. For me, it's going to be very fascinating to see. I think, you know, UNC, as we've said, they've got the hot goaltending. They've been there before. As we mentioned, James Madison does have a victory over UNC right at the very beginning of the season in February, but even still. And only one loss on the season was to Maryland, who themselves was the Final Four team, and JMU undefeated against ACC teams in non-con, undefeated against almost undefeated against Big Ten teams as well. So it's not like because JMU's in the CAA, they haven't, you know, been able to beat up on great teams, because they have. But UNC's very interesting case because they're the hottest team in the nation, I think, right now. And then BC Maryland is going to be fun, too, because, again, rematch of the title game, two teams with well-balanced attacks, and also kind of interesting with, you know, BC's already knocked off one of the best teams in the tournament in Stony Brook last week, and now they got Maryland, so they'll be game, but at the same token, Maryland, I mean, what more needs to be said about the Terps and Kathy Reese getting everybody all prepared, and she's been one of the best game planners in all women's across through the years, and it reflects usually on Memorial Day weekend with a title for the Terps. So, very interesting Final Four, and I think, you know, any one of the four teams could win it, you know, in any given Sunday when it comes to Championship Sunday. You know, it's going to be fun because, again, we kind of have, like last year, of the traditional teams versus some of the newbies. Last year had a few more of the newbies, but even still, going to be fun to see. Also, just in case weather is in your forte, going to be warm on Friday. Going to be 80 here on Long Island, and then going to be in the 70s with cloudy skies, might be thunderstorms in the morning, which might wet the field, but going to be a nice and comfortable 71 once the storms clear out.
Yeah, I'll be out there first thing tomorrow morning for open practice. I think JMU starts at 9 a.m., so that'll be interesting.
So, something to keep in mind with the, you know, Memorial Day weekend, we always talk about the weather when it usually gets way hotter than the rest of the lacrosse season, but should be some ideal temperature conditions, especially on Sunday plus Friday night is a little bit cooler under the dark, so heat might not be an issue as much as it can be on Memorial Days. This leads us to our pick'em segment. So who do we have lifting the trophy at Lavelle on Sunday afternoon?
All right, I'll go first. I'll take North Carolina over James Madison, and I'll take Maryland over BC, and I'll take Maryland over North Carolina. A little bit of revenge for 2016, and I'll go all chalk, and I'll take the one seed over the two seed.
All right. I guess I can go next. I do have to say I do truly, truly think that JMU can end UNC's hot streak, and I think I have to pick them. But I think they have a very good shot. I'm very optimistic about that game. With Boston College Maryland, I do have to pick Maryland. I'm so impressed by Maryland. Watching them play is so cool. I think it's very interesting how they don't really foul. They have so much less fouls than everyone else I ever watch. It's incredible that they play defense that well and do not foul, which is difficult to do. It seems like in everything they call a lot of fouls, but not against Maryland. So Maryland against James Madison in the final, even myself being a JMU student, I cannot pick against Maryland. I just can't do it. I would be lying if I picked JMU, so I have to go with Maryland over JMU in the final. Three or four goals. Not kind of JMU will linger around, but I don't think it'll be the thriller everyone wants. I think Maryland's pretty dang good.
Maryland's going down. That's my pick. I've got BC over the Terps on Friday night. I saw this BC team in person. I think Maryland probably isn't quite as high-powered the offense and the defense of Stony Brook, but they will fare better in the draw. But I just think I think Apuza is the best draw specialist in the country this year, and I think it'll be enough to help BC win. So I've got Boston College in the championship game against North Carolina and the hot goalie, Taylor Marino. And then BC, UNC, the ACC title for the third time this year, they'll be playing against each other, if that were to be kind of a rubber game. BC won the regular season championship, and then regular season game, and then UNC won the conference championship. Anyway, if it was BC against UNC, I would go, and I've been waffling back and forth on this matchup in my head. I'll go North Carolina. I just think they're a little bit deeper up front, and they have the better goalkeeping. And Marie McCool, to our 10 finalists in her own right, will be able to draw pretty even to Puzo. So I've got Tar Heels as my champions.
I'd go with all ACC final, UNC versus BC. I think if they face UNC, BC is really going to want that win, because obviously they were pretty upset about not getting the win in the ACC tournament. So I'm going BC over UNC in overtime.
Oof.
I'm going to go with UNC over James Madison. I just think North Carolina is too hot of a team right now and just kind of clicking on all cylinders for plus, you know, revenge game factor for them after opening the season with the loss against JMU. So give me UNC in that semifinal. Maryland-Boston College is going to be a classic. And I'm, because I will say, and this is the part where Jake's going to roll his eyes, I have had some compliments from the Boston College lacrosse community about some prior podcasts, so they're fans of the podcasts. But in addition to that, though, I think, you know, BC has that fire under them from last year. Nothing to take away from Maryland, because Maryland's, you know, been great as well. But I think, you know, just that fire from last year is going to put them just over the top. It's going to be a one- or two-goal game. But give me BC. You know, BC kind of has the disrespect card being played as well, being a bit underseeded as a four when you could have made a case for a two or three. So I like the Eagles in that one. And then Eagles Tar Heels in the title game, I'm going to go with I'll go with BC as well, because I think they're a little bit more well-rounded than UNC. It's just that UNC's been playing a bit hotter. Going to be a very close one, obviously, when you have conference foes, but I'll go with BC winning their first title. Also, just want to give a quick shout-out. Congratulations to Lemoyne on winning their first D2 women's lacrosse title, bringing that back up to Syracuse over the weekend. And then this weekend's also the D3 Final Four. You got Salisbury against Gettysburg and the College of New Jersey against Middlesbrough on Saturday. They'll square off on Sunday for the national title. So any final thoughts before we wrap things up?
Hey, I know I took UNC to win the title. I don't want to sleep on JMU, though. And I feel like a few of us were sleeping on JMU a little bit. This team is... They don't get the name recognition of a Maryland or North Carolina because they haven't really been there before. But from one mid-major school to another, and with the amount of senior leadership that team has, it wouldn't surprise me if James Madison beat North Carolina, or even if they won the title. Crazy things can happen in the Final Four. And on paper, I think all four of these teams are like really, really close together.
Yeah.
That's the only other thing I wanted to say.
Absolutely. And I got to give the mid-major love back. It's interesting. You'll love and hate this. At the beginning of the year, I didn't know, I wasn't as invested as in women's lacrosse as I am now. And seeing Stony Brook up at the top of the rankings, I was like, wow. Like, you know, I asked my sports information director at Stony Brook, you know, what do they have? And he kind of rolled his eyes and said, oh, yeah, you know, they don't play the schedule we play and this and that. And I was like, okay, so that's all I had known. I was like, okay, so the whole year I kind of, yeah, they're undefeated. I looked at their schedule. They played a really solid schedule, really, really solid schedule. Just not any of the teams in the Final Four, unlike the other three teams there. And so I was really looking forward to being able to sit down and watch them play Boston College. And I was heartbroken. I'm sure not as much as you guys, but I was heartbroken to see Stony Brook lose. That I wanted them to win so bad, and they proved to me all I ever needed to see. They proved to me that they certainly belong in the final. I mean, they belong. You know, I wish it was the Final Five, because they are right there with these teams, if not better. You know, they seems like they'd win 5 out of 10 matches 10 games against Boston College or maybe any of the other teams. And I was really pulling for them. So that was really cool to see. And that certainly flipped the perspective. And I was like, wow, okay, like this team certainly, without a doubt, belongs in the best team in the country conversation.
There's been a lot of comparisons drawn between that the Stonebrook women's program and the Albany men's program, which for so long could not get over the hump. I mean, they had the Thompson brothers. They had all this offensive talent for so many years, and you know, it's funny that Lyle Thompson graduated without ever being able to play in a Final Four, the same way Kylie O'Miller's graduating without ever being able to play in her Final Four. But you look at that Albany program, and finally this year, what do? They're finally in a Final Four, and you know, a lot of people expect them to win this weekend. I'm not so sure. I think Maryland's a little deeper, but anyway, this isn't the men's podcast. for Stonebrook, they'll stay a powerhouse. Joe Spolina's, I've seen him firsthand. I think he's the best coach in the country, so they won't go away. But it was a tough loss to BC, obviously. But a lot in store this weekend, and I'm excited to see the four teams that will be at Stony Brook.
Yeah, I just want to give you credit for forcing every narrative platitude you could into your prediction. I'm proud of you, buddy.
Laura, any final thoughts?
I guess just echoing that really these four teams are pretty even in terms of the talent. It really could be anyone's game, but I gotta end pushing BC a little bit more because that's my brand, and just point out that BC is better than they were last year and they do not have Kenzie Kent. So that speaks volumes about how much talent there is. They can be this good without Kenzie.
A Kenzie Kent story is absolutely incredible. I am so intrigued. I wish I could do a story on her. That is so cool.
Yeah, she's a good kid. She works really hard. We're very excited to have a full season of her on lacrosse.
Mm-hmm. I mean, her stats, like, what, like 77 points last year and like, what was it, like half a season?
Not like even 12, half a season.
Not like 12 games. Like 12 games and 77 points. It's just like... Mm-hmm. Just mind-boggling.
Yeah, and I think we said last night on the men's podcast about, you know, every team that's in the Final Four, they win it, you make the case that they're the best team in the nation, hands down. It's the same on the women's, and that's the great thing, I think. Yeah, it's chalky, but you know what? It's all worth it come Memorial Day weekend, and whoever wins it, they're pretty much the undisputed champs, and they've earned it no matter what. So I think we're definitely in for a great weekend at Stony Brook this weekend.
I think both the semifinals will be great, and I think whoever winds up in the championship game will. I think it'll be a, you know, the championship game is the last couple of years is, I can say it's been a bust, you know, but it hasn't been, you know, maybe like the best game of the year. Like you always kind of dream the championship game will be the best game of the year. I don't know if the championship game is the best game of the year, but I think whoever makes it in the championship game this year, I think it'll be a really great championship and a great way to end the year.
I still think the best game of the year was last week in Boston College, but we'll see if anything can top it. It would be exciting if something could.
Alrighty, so first off, once again, thank you to Harry and Laura. Harry is part of JMU's student newspaper, The Breeze. You could follow him along. We'll share our Twitter handles in a bit. And Laura, you could catch her at BC Interruption, which is our BC affiliate on the SB Nation network. So thanks once again for hopping on board with us.
Yeah.
No problem. Loved it.
All right. So once again, to connect with us, collegecross.com is going to be your hub for everything for championship weekend, men and women's. Skylar will be on the scene at Stony Brook for the women's Final Four. And as we said last night, Safe and Chris will be at the men's in Foxborough. So follow us along. We got a lot of on-the-field reporting heading your way, as well as some extra goodies on our social media outlets, including Instagram, college_cross, Facebook, collegecross. And, of course, always on Twitter at college_cross. And on Twitter, you can also follow me. I'm at RyanMcD29.
@ATVS_JakeNazar.
@SkylarJGilbert.
And I'm @ZClaw97.
I'm @LBearStucky, and BC Interruption is @BC Interruption if you want really biased BC coverage.
And so once again, next week, we're going to be wrapping it all up. And, you know, once again, happy to have you guys on board for this one. We had a lot of fun doing it. We hope you did, too. And, yeah, so, gonna be a fun weekend in Stony Brook. We hope you guys enjoyed a little podcast here, and we'll catch you next week. Once again, follow all of us for all your needs this weekend in the national title game and championship weekends. Have a very happy Memorial Day, and we'll catch you next week as we take a look back at NCAA championship weekend.
Stay hydrated.
All right, from all of us at College Cross, thanks for listening. And as Jake likes to steal my thunder, stay hydrated.